Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Jan. Good morning, everyone. We are here for the regular meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board Employees Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Today is Tuesday, February 25th, 2025. It is currently 10:01 a.m. Can I have a roll call, please, Jan?
Yes, Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Mr. DeClean?
Here.
Ms. Ford?
Here.
Mr. Helling?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovac?
Here.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Quorum.
Thank you, Jan. Item one for the regular meeting, appointment of committees for 2025. Letter A is the Administration and Operations Committee. For this committee, I'd like to nominate Tim Helling, Dustin DeClean, and Bill Christensen for that committee, with Tim being the chairperson for that. Any comments or questions regarding that? All right, moving on to item 1B, appointment of committees for 2025, the Investment Committee. This is a committee of the whole board. And with that, I would like to nominate or assign Tom Klusman as the chairperson of that board, for that committee. Moving on to item 1, letter C, the Legislative Committee. For 2025, this is also the committee of the whole board. And I would like to assign Deborah Ford as the chairperson of that committee. And finally, item 1, letter D, litigation committee, is an ad hoc committee, and we will assign the committee members on a as-needed basis as the year progresses. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Jerry, any comments from you?
Well, I have one quick comment that the committees will elect their vice chair at the next committee meeting. That's normally the way it's done every year. So, for example, the A&O would elect the vice chair in March.
Thank you, Jerry. And just general notes for these committees. I appreciate everyone's efforts regarding, and looking forward to the collaborations we've developed on this board with board members or staff. So thank you, everyone. Moving on to item 2, approval of minutes. Letter A, annual meeting held January 28, 2025. Any comments or questions from board members or staff regarding the minutes? Not hearing any comments or questions. Yes, go ahead, Tom.
Jerry, is that the one that I asked you to tweak?
Yes, Terry, you want to go ahead and put that on the screen?
Yeah, I requested that a change be made to a correction, actually, to the last sentence in what you opened.
Right, so Tom, what we did is we, Jan went back and looked at, listened to the tape and just did it verbatim, just to make sure we covered all of your points. Tom's main point here was that in the draft, I think it said Mr. Klusman noted, where I don't think he was quite able to say with any definitive level of certainty on that point. So he wanted us to reference his actual words, which were apparently, it appears this is happening, that, you know, it appears that applicants for DDR are telling the medical panel and medical council. It's not that he had any certainty about what they're telling them, because he's not there, right? So it's we just put in a quote that was the verbatim text, and if that's suitable, Tom, we'll go ahead and ask the trustees to consider adopting it.
Legislative meeting.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, it's the legislative meeting, Tom.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I didn't see this whole thing, so I'll have to look at it. But if you're saying that's what the recording says, then that's apparently what says, but...
So legislative minutes are at the end of the meeting, and you'll have time to look at it between now and then, perhaps?
Okay, that's the one.
Thank you, Tom, and Jerry. So are we waiting on the motion to approve then?
I'll motion for the regular minutes of the January 28th meeting. I'm sorry, I misspoke about, this was that committee meeting we had on the same day, so I confused the two. My apologies.
No worries. So Tom made the motion to approve the minutes for the annual board meeting, January 28th, 2025. Do we have a second?
Justin will second.
Thank you, Justin. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections. The motion to approve the annual, motion to approve the minutes for the annual meeting held January 28th, 2025 passes. Moving on to item three, the Chief Investment Officer report. Go ahead, David.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll just give my very brief remarks, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Sauer to give the performance updates. Just wanted to remind everybody that we have a March Investment Committee meeting on March 13th, so in about 2 weeks. The package will be going out at the end of next week. The plan will be to focus again on the de-risking analysis, glide path analysis that Callan has been presenting the last couple meetings. We do believe that the discussions that we're having at these meetings that are really important, just to understand Act 12 better, as well as the risks determining the risk and return we want on the fund going forward as well. I know based on the feedback, some of the feedback we got at the committee, we are planning on putting a placeholder on the agenda for an approval item. I just want to emphasize that the intent is not to put any pressure on the board or the committee. If we go through the presentation, we have a great discussion, and the committee ends up being comfortable making a decision, we'll have the ability to approve a glide path. If we get to the discussion and for whatever reason committee members want more information or want more time, we will be prepared to continue the discussion at the April meeting. The decisions that we eventually will make will ultimately drive our priorities from an investment standpoint for the rest of the year, which is, I guess, another reason why this is all very important. So I just wanted to, that was all my prepared remarks, and I know Eric's prepared to give the performance update for the fund.
Thank you, David. Any comments for board members or staff for David? All right, thank you, David. Go ahead, Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. The fund ended the month of January with a value of $6.13 billion, a return of 1.8% net of fees, outperformed the benchmark by approximately 19 basis points. The primary relative performance driver for the month was the fund's public equity style bias, which added 15 basis points, and this was from the fund's international and large cap value bias. You can see that the fund has underperformed the benchmark in the 1 and 5 year periods shown in the table, while outperforming over longer time periods. As of February 24th, the fund was up 0.4% month to date in February, which brought the year-to-date return to up 2.2% and the fund value to $6.16 billion. Six out of the fund's 15 active mandates are outperforming year-to-date, and the public equity asset class is outperforming its benchmark year to date. Year to date, we've seen a change in the value of investments of $131.9 million, received contributions of $214.9 million, and paid out benefits and expenses of $43.6 million. This month, we'll be withdrawing $11 million from Brandis. They're actually off to a very strong start, up over 10% to start the year. So that gives us an opportunity to, take a little money from them to
you know, keep our cash balance replenished. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them at this time. Otherwise, that concludes my report.
Thank you, Eric. Any comments or questions from board members or staff?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I was just curious, what's driving Brandis's performance this early this year?
Sure. Their top holding is Alibaba Group, which, you know, is a kind of a Chinese technology company, and there's a lot of optimism over Alibaba's AI strategy. So that's, I think, you know, up over, 60 to 70%, you know, to start the year, depending on the day. It's volatile. But they're just Europe in general has done really well with some of the, you know, the optimism of around a potential resolution to the, you know, the war in Ukraine. International stocks have actually, you know, outperformed the U.S., which is the reason for, you know, our international bias being such a strong contributor in January. So that's really been what's driving their performance.
Yeah, thank you. I ask because, you know, Wall Street Journal had an article this morning about European stocks versus the S&P 500 this year. So it's kind of consistent with a bigger trend. Thank you.
Yes, they've definitely been a beneficiary of that. Yeah.
Thank you, Rudy. I was thinking the same thing. Thanks for the question. Thank you, Eric. Any other comments or questions? All right. Thank you, David and Eric, for the Chief Investment Officer report. Moving on to item four, the Investment Committee report. Go ahead, Tom.
Deborah's going to handle that since she ran the meeting on February, the most recent meeting on February 13th that I was out of town for.
That's right. Thank you, Tom. Go ahead, Deborah.
Okay, thank you. At its February 13th meeting, Callan presented phase two of the glide path analysis. Callan's presentation was updated compared to their phase one presentation to incorporate their new 2025 capital market assumptions along with the feedback that was received at the December meeting. While no decisions were made, there was a good discussion about Act 12's impact on the fund. Based on the committee's feedback, Callan plans to further analyze each of the glide path past contribution sensitivity to market volatility and to also provide another summary of the glide path at the March meeting. Some members of the committee also requested that the March discussion on glide paths happen alongside some context on contribution volatility from the actuary and the city. After that, staff went over the fund's fourth quarter performance report and provided routine due diligence reports on UBS Hedge Fund Solutions, Mizero Financial, Polen Capital Management, and Earnest Partners. There were no approval items at this meeting. That concludes my reports.
Thank you, Deborah. Any comments or questions from board members or staff regarding the Investment Committee report? Okay, thank you, Deborah. Not hearing any questions, we'll move on to item five, the Legislative Committee report. And we just had that meeting at 9 a.m. today regarding A and B. Gary, do we have to do anything regarding this, or is it all taken care of regarding the motion?
No, there was a meeting of the full board, a meeting of the whole for the Legislative Committee, and it approved item 5B. So this is just a placeholder, depending on what happened in that meeting. So no further action is required at this point anyway, and there'll be more meetings in the future on this subject. Yeah.
Great, thank you. Jerry, Deborah, do you have anything to add, or are you up?
No, I think that pretty much summarizes it.
Awesome. Sounds good. We'll move on from item five, if there's no comments or questions from board members or staff, to item six, new business, letter A, retirement, death claim, and refunds for January 2025. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in the packet is the normal monthly report for retirement, death claims, and refunds for the month, and a motion would be in order if there are no questions or comments to approve the payroll. But if there are questions or comments, we'll be happy to take them as well.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions from board members or staff for payroll from January 2025? Now, if you're in any, I'll entertain a motion to approve the payroll for January 2025.
Board moves approval.
Thank you, Don. Do you have a second?
I have a second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve payroll January 2025 passes. Moving on to item six, letter B, conference request, February 25th, 2025 board meeting. Go ahead, Jerry, actually, I can handle this.
Sure.
One conference request for February 2025 board meeting. It's for Keith Dickerson and Eric Hsu going to be completing the BlackRock due diligence trip. It's in San Francisco, California, set for May 27th through the 29th, 2025, with an estimated cost of $1,700 per person. Any comments or questions regarding the conference request? All right, not hearing any, I'll entertain a motion to approve the conference requests for February 2025 for Keith Dickerson and Aaron Hsu for the BlackRock due diligence trip.
Justin will make that motion.
Thank you, Justin. Do you have a second?
Bill will second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve the conference request for February 2025 passes. Item six, letter C, the approval of independent reviewer hearing examiner Christopher Foley. Gus, are you going to be handling this?
Yeah, this agenda item is before you for your approval. If you do approve Mr. Foley for this position, that'll bring our staffing up to four, which gives us a little more room to maneuver appeals in our area. He is qualified for the service per Mr. McLean, and I'm willing to take any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Gus. Any comments or questions? Do you have anything, Patrick, before I put it towards a motion?
No, Mr. Chair. I think Gus covered it. I just conduct essentially a resume review to ensure that they meet the minimum qualifications, and I don't do anything beyond that, just to keep an arm's length distance between myself and hearing examiners. So other than my comments that this individual appears qualified for the position, I don't have anything to add. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff before I make one comment? Not hearing any from other board members or staff. Gus, just wanted to thank you for your efforts for this. I know quite a few months ago this was a pretty dire situation regarding our reviewers and hearing examiners, so thanks for taking it on yourself and get this done. The floor sounds great, and I think moving forward, we have a great team regarding. So thank you.
I appreciate the recognition. I would say that I'm going to continue to attempt to add members to this area of our operation, because there's always flux. There's always people, you know, this is, these are generally people at the end of their careers, and you just have to have things ready. So thank you.
Thank you. And we'll move forward, entertain a motion for the approval of independent reviewer, hearing examiner, Christopher Foley.
Conrad so moves.
Questman will second.
Thank you, Rudy. Thank you, Tom. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections. The approval of independent reviewer, hearing examiner, Christopher Foley passes. Moving on to item six, letter D, approval of suspension for ordinary disability benefits for Angela L.J. Cotton. Gus, will you be handling this as well?
Yeah, this memo is before you to review the circumstances surrounding the annual reexamination for Ms. L.G. Cotton. We've made a whole host of attempts to notify her of her obligation to appear at the last two medical councils. She has not updated her contact information with us. She has not returned attempts to contact her via phone, email, and multiple residences. So this is before you to review to make a decision in the matter, as it's not vested in our staff at this time to make decisions about suspensions of benefits. That's under the purview of the board.
Thank you, Gus. So the approval as put forward in your memo, any comments or questions regarding for Gus or Jerry? Right, not hearing any. Entertaining motion for the approval of suspension for ordinary disability benefits for Angela L.J. Cotton.
Justin will make that motion.
Thank you, Justin. Do I have a second?
4 seconds.
Thank you, Deborah. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections. The motion to approve the suspension for ordinary disability benefits for Angela L.G. Cotton is approved. Moving on, item six, letter E, request by Firefighters Local 215 for pension payroll deductions for political action committee contributions and for union membership for retirees. I believe, Patrick, are you going to speak to this?
I absolutely can, Mr. Chair, but before I do, I don't know if Jerry had any introduction. I don't want to step on his toes.
Well, my toes are pretty hard these days, but let's just say that there are laws and rules surrounding this subject. We have a state law, a charter ordinance, and there's a board rule too that addresses this. And Terry, did you have it available for the screen? And Patrick's going to kind of give the board, we'll give the board a rundown on the governing law in regards to pensions and deductions from pension payments. Go ahead, Patrick.
Thank you, Jerry. There is, as the board is probably aware, based on some of the litigation from last year, there is a state statute that prohibits the division of ERS pension benefits. That statute is 62.634, and it prohibits even the voluntary or elective assignment of any ERS benefits for any purpose except those that are enumerated in the statute. The only exceptions to the anti-alienation provision are for essentially child support and spousal support orders, taxes, and insurance premiums. And so essentially the request here is asking the board to permit payroll deductions that are not authorized by statute. So essentially, it's not even really a matter of discretion. The state has already acted in this area and prohibits the type of assignments that are part of this request. I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone has.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? So, Jerry, will you communicate then with Eric regarding?
I will. I'd be happy to. I just wanted to make sure the board had an opportunity to review this matter, and it does involve some interpretation of the law, and it was also a good exercise, I think, for all the trustees who haven't, you know, participated in a decision about this before. It comes up every once in a while. You know, every 8 to 10 years, we get a request like this.
Thank you all, both Jerry and Patrick. Any other comments or questions for item 6, letter E? Hearing any, we'll move on to item 7, medical reports, letter A, all duty and ordinary disability applications and reexaminations for February 2025.
Well, we have a light report this month, and I'll turn it over to Gus to just give you the details.
Yeah, I would first like to thank Patrick at the last medical council meeting for orienting our new alternate doctor who will be attending quarterly. And the presentation put together was well done, and it was a good refresher for the rest of the medical council. I'd also like to thank board members for who attended the review, that being Ms. Ford and Mr. Klusman. I hope you took away some knowledge or information regarding the process. I just wanted to note that. Otherwise, there's no medical panel report for this month. And as far as medical council reports, there's only an approvals report for 3 reexaminations that are before you for your approval.
Thank you, Gus. Any comments or questions regarding? Just a quick comment for Jerry. Under the medical council approvals report, there is one Frank Bertoshnik, who's for police officer at Milwaukee Police Department. He was my one of my former partners with the department when I was in the patrol division. Do I need to recuse myself from any of that approval, Jerry?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Hearing no other comments or questions, I have a motion to approve medical reports for February 2025.
No other motions.
Thank you, Tim. Do I have a second?
Bill, second.
Oh, no.
I heard Bill first for the second. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve medical reports for February passes. Moving on to item 8, unfinished business, letter A, pending legal opinions and service request report. Harry, start with you.
Sure.
Or do you want to go right to Pat?
Well, the first item up is the legal opinions, and Patrick, you can speak to that if you like.
Thanks, Jerry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any specific comments to make. We're still looking at that issue. We don't have any formal opinion to present to this hearing, obviously. But if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff regarding the first part? right, not hearing any, move on to item eight, letter B, the pending legislation report.
Well, actually, Matthew, I have a comment about part three. Very brief, the executive recruiter RFP and contract was approved this morning, so don't need to go into that any further. But that's on the list.
Item three, on part three, item number three there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
On the pending legislation report, part three in that report, in the last item, the second item on part three, limited duty protocols, law enforcement standards bureau requirements. The city attorney's office is still looking at that as well. I don't believe Patrick was present at that meeting. Were you there, Patrick? No, I don't think you were.
I believe I was when it, I think it came up twice, and I was there for the second one, unless I'm mistaken, but I was present, yeah.
Right. So this item is still pending some guidance from the city attorney's office. I think that's all I can say about it. Do you have anything further, Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, we've reached informal conclusions about it. I was hoping to get a written memo to the board, if the board is not inclined to wait for that and would like to hear informal comments, I'm certainly happy to offer them now. Otherwise, I intend to present a written memo and discussion at the next meeting, but I will leave it to the pleasure of the board.
Patrick, it's Matt. I wouldn't mind hearing a little bit about it. There's been quite a few phone calls and comments regarding if you don't mind just a brief summary of where we're at.
Sure. So I have taken a look at the current Milwaukee Police Department standard operating procedure related to limited duty, as well as the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Standards Board procedure related to annual qualifications around which this inquiry revolves. I have not been able to identify any changes to the policy, so at least from a written standpoint, it appears that those policies remain relatively consistent with what they have been over the past several years. For those of you who are not aware, the Milwaukee Police Department maintains a limited duty protocol for police officers who are unable, usually due to physical restrictions, but occasionally due to mental health issues, from responding in their full capacity as a police officer. These officers are usually assigned to either the communications division or the records management division, and are essentially on a light duty status that doesn't require them to perform all of the functions of a police officer. In the SOP, however, it does require those limited duty officers to comply with law enforcement, the LESB Law Enforcement Standards Board mandates, including training requirements. If you look at the LESB standards themselves, and this is a state level body that essentially establishes certification requirements for police officers in the state of Wisconsin, there are initial requirements, obviously, like going to the police academy, but then there's also ongoing requirements on an annual basis that officers have to meet in order to maintain their law enforcement certification. The standards recognize that individuals, either due to leaves of absence or perhaps even light duty, may not be able to satisfy the annual qualification. And in those instances, the standards essentially state that you can miss up to two consecutive years of annual training before you are recommended for decertification. However, it does permit departments to submit petitions for additional time. And just based on my experience in duty disability cases, it's my understanding that individuals in the Milwaukee Police Department who are on the limited duty protocol apply for those waivers, and they're generally granted, in my understanding. So you have individuals who've been on limited duty for several years and may not be fulfilling all of their annual LESB training requirements, but because they're getting these waivers, they're not being decertified as law enforcement officers, which allows them to continue their employment with the Milwaukee Police Department. This becomes relevant to the pension board, because obviously if somebody cannot meet their annual training requirement and they're decertified as a law enforcement officer, they're eligible to apply for duty disability or ordinary disability, as the case may be. The question was presented, or the request essentially, to determine whether the board should consider making some sort of recommendation to the city to possibly look at whether a change to the MPD policy or the Law Enforcement Standards Board policy related to light duty should be amended in order to essentially bring them in line. And let me explain what that means. So we had two, it's my understanding, recent duty disability applications that where the medical council determined, at least in part, that the individuals wouldn't be able to recertify, I believe it was their annual firearms training, and that formed part, but again, not the entire basis for certifying those individuals for an ERS disability benefit. And there was a question because the MPD's limited duty protocol essentially allows people or officers on limited duty to not have to engage in those responsibilities that are beyond their physical or mental limitations. But the LESP standards might require those individuals to recertify even if they're physically incapable of doing so, and even if they're providing other productive services to the police department. And so it's my understanding, at least, that the request was to see if there could be some clarification given or to bring the LESB and MPD standards in line with each other that would allow these limited duty officers to continue performing limited duty rather than essentially having been forced to apply for duty disability benefits. Where we're at is essentially that we have three concerns about the board engaging in that type of conduct. The first is that, and I am not a collective bargaining expert, but I did consult with our collective bargaining attorney who indicated that a request like of this kind could be construed as affecting working conditions, which would obviously place it within the realm of a collective bargaining issue, which is entirely within the purview of the city. So it essentially is a, you know, it's, I hate to jump back into our fiduciary training, and I'm sorry, my brief explanation is going a little long, but the, you know, the trustees, there's three parties to the trust. There's the beneficiaries, there's the settlor, which is the city, and then there's the trustees itself, which is this board and the staff of the ERS. And essentially, none of those three parties are designed to really intrude on the purview of the other parties. So the settlor shouldn't intrude on trustees' functions, and the trustees shouldn't intrude on settlor functions, of which plan design is one of the settlor functions. So that kind of dovetails with our second concern, which is that not only would this request intrude upon the purview of collective bargaining, which is something that the city manages, but it also appears to be more of a settlor concern rather than a trustee concern. In other words, it's a request of this kind seems like it would be sort of stepping out of the trustee lane and into the settlor lane. As trustees, you know, the board administers benefits, and if somebody's eligible for the benefits based on the structure elected by the settlor, then that's what it is. And if there's going to be a change to the structure of the fund or the benefits, that should really come from the settlor and not the trustees. And then the third concern essentially is that is really just an umbrella of both of those two initial concerns, is sort of optics. The fact that the board would be advocating for changes to law enforcement standards, again, seems like it is stepping out of its role as a trustee over the pension fund and is really kind of getting into the lane of both the city and other agencies. That's obviously a policy consideration, not a legal consideration, but I really do feel like I would be remiss if I didn't bring it up. So to button all that up, you know, we have some both legal and policy concerns about essentially taking a position on law enforcement standards, even if it's for the purposes of clarifying who is and is not eligible for duty disability benefit administered by the board. And I completely failed in making that brief, but there's really no way to break it down that's as concise as I can get it. And if anybody wants me to extrapolate on anything, I'd certainly be happy to. But at the end of the day, this is not something we would generally recommend that the board get involved in.
Thank you, Patrick, for that explanation. And again, I just know that nothing's formal until for the written report, but thank you for that update. Any comments or questions from board members or staff?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Klusman.
Go ahead, Tom.
Just for the record, because I know some people, this is obviously an emotional issue for some, because I've been confronted about it also. And I don't know if people hear one thing and their emotions get to them and it goes through their head in another. I never advocated that we as a pension board advocate for any particular lobbying or changes to anything. I just, when the last two issues came up, there seemed to be a disconnect from my experience with the department SOP and what I heard was part of the fact set in the most recent ones. So I was just alerting that maybe we want to tell someone about that over at the city, because I had talked to a former board member about it, Ms. King, who's now the benefits director over there, and they were unaware of it. So just because there was a few mentions made about this board advocating for something in this realm, and I never put that forth. I'm just looking to connect the dots from across the street, but it all sounds well and good, and we can put this to rest.
Mr. Chair, may I just add a comment?
Yes, go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Tom, for that clarification. That actually helps clarify the issue for me. It was candidly a little hazy as to what the request was, so that's certainly helpful clarification. And I will just add that I think you're correct. I think that there is a, I guess, a policy disconnect between the LESB standards and the MPD SOP, and that's because, you know, the MPD SOP is really designed to keep, you know, injured officers on duty as long as possible, you know, but they also fall under the LESB, and the LESB has its own priorities, which is to ensure that it's certifying officers consistent with, you know, what it feels is important. So I think you're 100% right that the two, I guess, policies that are driving the LESB standards and the limited duty protocol aren't exactly nested, you know, 100%, and it does create an issue when it comes to pension benefits, because the city might be happy to continue employing an individual, but if the LESB is not willing to recertify them, then they become eligible for duty disability. So I think that it's a keen observation, and I'm glad that someone's already forwarded it on to the city, but I'll certainly follow up with them as well based on your comments to make sure that they have an understanding of the concern, if that's okay with you.
Yes, definitely, because I know some people that have at least characterized it to me from what they heard, and then they heard from a guy that heard, they believe that my motivation was to somehow curtail DDR, but that's not the case. A disabled police officer can come from one of two places. They can become disabled from an act on the job, and then the department will place them sometimes into a limited duty assignment, or they'll go through the DDR process, and possibly some have been granted DDR and went off on retirement, and some have not, and they returned and continue to work limited duty. But more importantly, for the good of our members, like you mentioned, our fiduciary duty, if people get hurt off-duty also in car accidents and home repair accidents and things, and if they can't meet this requirement that you mentioned from LESB about a few deferments and then you're out, they could lose their employment, impact their lives seriously. So that's why I was asking about it, to allow for that, but because it cuts both ways. So I just wanted to be clear on that, but I appreciate your work on this, Patrick.
No, happy to do it. And there was a case several years ago, it's a published case now from the Court of Appeals, where the applicant's inability to meet LASB standards was an issue, but the court essentially found that the applicant still didn't qualify for duty disability because his injury was not the same reason that he was applying for duty disability is the same reason he couldn't apply for or couldn't satisfy the LESB standards, and that reason was not duty related. So kind of going hand in hand, but you're absolutely correct that it is a factor. May I seek clarification from the board? Is there an appetite to receive a memo on this? Is there a desire for further discussion? Just so I want to make sure the board is getting what it wants.
I'll open it up to other board members. I have a thought that I think a written memo might be appropriate, Patrick. I've gotten a lot of questions and comments about this, like Tom mentioned as well, and maybe having it in writing, we can forward that on to individuals just to look at as well. Any thoughts regarding from other members?
Mr. Chair, excuse me, I agree. A memo should be in order. This is really an issue, you know, for the police department in the city to determine to what extent they want to improve or expand or further or more broadly utilize their limited duty program. And it says, Mr. Klusman pointed out, it's not just an issue for duty disability, it's also an issue for people who are injured off the job and could have an opportunity to continue working for the department in a limited duty capacity, but would be barred from doing that by the Law Enforcement Standards Board. So I think our obligation, or I shouldn't say obligation, but there's no prohibition preventing us from simply laying out the facts for the city and the department in reference to how this operates, or how it affects the administration of the pensions, and it's for them to decide whether they want to pursue any change. And I certainly agree it's inappropriate for us to actually lobby the Law Enforcement Standards Board for the reasons outlined. So I think a memo that is, you know, factual in nature and lays out the issue and the effect would be helpful to everyone.
Thank you, Rudy. Any comments or questions from other members? All right, Patrick, I think a memo would be in order if that works for you, please. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Tom, thanks also for just, as always, bringing, kind of catching an issue ahead of time and bringing it to the attention, and everyone for working through it together. Once again, so any other comments before we move on? Not hearing any other comments, we'll move on to item 8, letter C, the Executive Director's Report, Inventory of ERS Projects. Go ahead, Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to begin with item 2 for member services, since there are no vacancies currently in our staff. We had 41 retirees on the January payroll, and we're expecting approximately 42 for February. There were approximately 29 deaths in December. And we did have some workshops for MPS and General City people this month earlier on the 12th and the 21st. Moving down to financial services, we mailed out our 1099-R forms, this is tax reporting forms, to our members before the end of January, which is required by law. And members can also download them using member self-service on our website if they wish to do so. Outside earnings letters that have to do with the duty disability beneficiaries will be mailed out by the middle of next month. And we send them out every year for those who are either on disability or have elected early retirement because they have to furnish their 1040s for us to see if they have qualified for exceeded the outside earnings limitations. And then Daniel Gopalin, our CFO, met with the Legislative Audit Bureau over the telephone to start working on the details for the kickoff of the 2024 financial audit. Daniel, do you have any comments on that? Are you on the line, Daniel?
Yeah, this is Dan. Yeah, we just had just kind of a kickoff meeting and just they gave us their preliminary list of audit items that we need to provide with them.
Thank you, Daniel. And then the last time, well, Information Services is running well. I'm glad to report. We keep our fingers crossed all the time on security, but we do more than that. We have security protocols in place that are apparently still working, knock on wood. and then on administration, I won't go into this at any length because I mentioned earlier that the Civil Service Commission is meeting this afternoon in connection with the board's request to exempt the ED position so that the next hire will be an exempt position as the current incumbent is already. So that's my report for the month.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Not hearing any, we can move on to item 8, letter D and E. This was talked about at length earlier. Any comments or questions, Jerry, for this?
No, that was covered adequately a couple times before, actually. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments from board members or staff regarding that? All right. Final item is going to be number 9, the informational. Are we doing anything with pending litigation reports, Jerry?
Not at this point, I don't think. Patrick, you have anything to report?
I don't have anything to add to whatever is captured in the report unless anyone has any questions.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Not hearing any. Jerry, any other discussion points for item E,
the minutes for the special legislative committee. Mr. Klusman, I don't know if you have time, if you had time during the meeting already to look at how we quoted you in the minutes, but if you are okay with that, then we'll just not address it further, but if you want further changes, just let me know.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I didn't get it. I don't have it. I only was looking at adding that one word to the earlier version, but there's a lot more in there, so I'll just take a look, so I'll let you know.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And then the final thing just wanted to mention is our financial statements need to be in by tomorrow, correct, Jerry?
That is correct. That's the deadline. I was going to mention that as well at the end. If you haven't done so already, please fill that out. You can do it online. They have that capability. I guess they're serious about the deadline as well. Okay. So then the last thing is the meeting reminders. There's an investment committee meeting on March 13th, and as was reported earlier in the meeting, there was a request that the board consider the funding and contributions issues associated with that grew out of the discussion about the ALM study at the last meeting. So Mr. Langer will be here to give a presentation on a review of the current funding policy and the contributions that may result from that. He'll be here with his colleague, Aaron Choen. And so the chair has agreed to call a special board meeting for about an hour before the investment committee meeting begins. And so the special board meeting will start at 9, and the investment committee meeting will start at 10. Again, that's to address the issues that arose during the last committee meeting, so I'm sure we'll all be interested to hear that. And then there's an A&O meeting on the 19th of March, and a regular meeting of the board is on the 25th.
Great, thank you, Jerry. And all the other items, 9, will be placed on file. And not hearing any comments or questions from board members or staff, we'll entertain a motion to adjourn this meeting.
Plus one, a motion.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Bill will second.
Justin will second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the meeting passes, and this meeting is concluded at 10:58 a.m. Thank you, everyone. Have a good day.